The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy
with Nissan
on News Talk.
And this is The Hard Shoulder, Kieran Cuddihy with you until 7 o'clock. Now, my next guest is playing live in Dublin on June 10th at Liberty Hall. I'm going to give you all the details on tickets in just a moment. But he is the journalist, the author, the filmmaker and the podcaster, John Ronson. John, you are very welcome to the programme. How are you?
I'm very well. How are you?
I'm not too bad at all. Tell me, I mentioned the event that's coming up in Dublin. This is all based around the Things Fell Apart series. For people who know nothing about it, John, what is Things Fell Apart?
Okay, Things Fell Apart. I was watching friends fall apart on the internet because they were getting too involved in particular culture war battles. By culture wars, I mean the battle for dominance over conflicting values. So I was sitting there watching friends get too involved in the transgender battle, for instance, and would and they kind of lost their minds. They lost their reputation. They lost their families. They lost all of their work and their life just became this battle. And I thought that's terrible. And also, I've got to be honest, quite interesting. Like, why is this happening to people? And I thought the way to tell that story would be to go back in time and find the pebbles thrown in the pond, the origin stories that led us to this world of excessive cultural conflicts that we're living in now.
Yeah, and for people who've listened to it, they'll appreciate that metaphor, because the pebble in the pond, I mean, the ripples are a reference you make continually throughout it, you know, the ripple effect, and the ripples felt years and years later. How difficult was it? You know, we'll take episode one, which is about abortion and how the evangelical movement adopted it as an issue. How difficult was it to go back and find the singularity, as it were?
Well, that was like a eureka moment. I was hiking. I was listening to this obscure audiobook while hiking, and I just heard this story about this kid, 19-year-old kid, American kid in the Swiss Alps. His father was a Christian art historian, and this kid had ambitions to be a Hollywood producer. So he convinced his father to let him make a documentary. To let him direct a documentary about Christian art history, because he wanted to make some arresting visual images to show Hollywood producers. Now, he put some anti-abortion images into this documentary series. And this was 5 years after Roe versus Wade. This was the late 1970s. The only people interested in protesting abortion at the time were Roman Catholics. The Christian right weren't interested. In fact, many of them were pro-choice. As a result of this young guy's arresting visual images just so he could have a Hollywood career, the Christian right became, it's an extraordinary story, became violent anti-abortion protesters. Doctors were killed eventually, and now, of course, Roe versus Wade is, you know, looks like it's going to be overturned. And you can trace the evangelical right's interest in this issue to this weird father and son in the Swiss Alps.
And is there a danger when you're looking for these origin stories, if I'll call them that,
that you're making it too pat?
It dismisses the kind of the multifactorial.
I agree, but and of course, and we went back and fact checked that particular story, you know, many times, because thinking, like, are we really saying here that this 19-year-old boy who wanted a showreel to show Hollywood producers instigated an entire culture war, politicized Jerry Falwell, the head of the Moral Majority, who went on to create many, many culture wars of their own? Like, am I really saying that? And to be honest, the honest truth is, like, yes, that is how history, that's how history unfolded. Now, is there an alternative history where this kid never existed, never wanted to make a Hollywood showreel, and things turned out pretty much exactly the same? Possibly, possibly. But the fact is, this weird story is historically accurate.
There's the reference as well to the culture wars, because that's what it's about, as you say, to a degree. It's something we attach to the Twitter generation more than anything. And what we learn across all of these episodes is that the culture wars predate Twitter.
Mm. They do. The cultural wars predate the internet. The cultural wars, the modern cultural wars, really began in the early 1970s when the Christian right, after 50 years of not really doing anything much, they sat out the 60s. They didn't have to do anything in the 50s because America was going the way that they wanted it to go. Suddenly got politicized. So yeah, it all began in the early 1970s. I think things escalated massively when libertarian tech utopians created the internet and took all of that conflict and created a business model and an algorithmic model that would prod and prod and prod at the conflict for their own financial ends. So that things got a lot worse when they came along.
Okay, as I was going to ask you, has it gotten worse, or is it just that the voices have gotten louder? You think like that it has actually made it worse, you think?
I think so, yeah. I think the algorithms that force us away from each other, that reward outrage, that punish curiosity, and then humans start to reward outrage and punish curiosity. This book I wrote several years ago called So You've Been Publicly Shamed, which was, I suppose, really the first look at what's become cancel culture, tells a story about a woman who was about to get on a plane, fly to Cape Town, tweeted something stupid. And while she was asleep on the plane, Twitter took control of her life and dismantled it. And anybody who said, can we just wait for her plane to land to get her to explain what she meant by that joke, they were piled in on too. Because curiosity that night was considered a weakness. Patience was considered a weakness. What was considered a strength was instant, cold, hard judgment. We don't need to wait till we hear what this woman has to say for herself. We know what she's like. So where did that come from? Did it come from just the way humans naturally are? Or did it come from the fact that we were now living in a world created by these tech utopian libertarians? I mean, I guess the truth is probably a combination of the two.
Is there a spillover effect, or does that kind of lack of curiosity and patience and nuance and empathy as well, a lack of empathy, does that exist still more online though than in the real world, or does it have a spillover?
I think it exists. Well, I mean, it certainly has a spillover because we had a Twitter president.
Fair point.
So you know, it's so in terms of like the way that politics has changed, and obviously things like January the 6th and so on, the Capitol insurrection and so on, you can see very real world consequences. But in terms of just people in grocery stores and, you know, neighbours, you know, that still feels in America a lot more peaceful. I live in a very mixed village in upstate New York, where 50% of the people are Trumpers and 50% are Black Lives Matter Democrats. And on a day-to-day basis, everything's fine. Like if someone's house was on fire, we'd all help. So on a day-to-day level, I think things are, which is why I'm not sure that I believe that civil war is imminent. There's a lot of people nowadays in America who think that civil war is imminent. I'm not sure that's true.
Yeah, I remember this great episode of This American Life, the podcast, and in one of them, they were uniting trolls with their victims.
And I
suppose it was just an example of kind of an absence of empathy online that immediately became apparent in both individuals when they met in person. And I admit that sentiment about the Civil War, it speaks to it. I mean, it's you know, there's a big leap between kind of angry mob on Twitter and, you know, people shooting at each other on the streets.
Yeah, and it's just unfortunate that so many of the kind of power structures in the world adhere to that Twitter. You know, like the conflict on social media. Politics loves it. The Republican Party over here have become, you know, like a party of trolls in a way. And the mainstream media sucks up to social media. So, you know, so many powerful institutions have been influenced by that horrible, cold outrage that occurs on social media. So it's infected the culture and the country in that way. But yeah, on a daily basis, people are still really nice to each other and want to help each other and want to support each other. And when opposing factions do get together, that's when culture wars end, as indeed Things Fell Apart, my show demonstrates.
And because institutions have chased that outrage to a degree, or chase that electorate, that constituency, however you want to describe it, that exists online. Has that destroyed the political centre?
Yeah, right now it has. Yeah, it has. Those of us, well, you know, being in the centre is now considered, you know, sort of a weakness, sort of pathetic, by the left, certainly being centre-left. I mean, but an awful lot of this is down to the fact that the right lurched so horrifically when Trump became president. This all came about because people on the left just could not understand how anybody could support a president who launched his campaign by calling Mexicans rapists. That was such a shift. That was such a kind of break in society. It was like a crack formed in society in that moment. So those of us on the left thought, well, you know, that's, you know, nobody can support this man. This man's a lunatic. And then we saw half the country did support the man. So a lot of it came from that. This huge, like this kind of Rorschach test.
And what's the consequence of that for a younger generation who grew up with that crack in society and grew up thinking that, you know, it's what's important is who is saying what as opposed to what they are saying?
Well, here's my hopeful view that younger kids, I think 12-year-old kids now, growing up in a world where their older siblings have created a very draconian set of rules, that if you go on social media and say something slightly wrong, it's going to affect you for the rest of your life. So I think there's going to be a lot of young kids who are thinking, that's not the world I want to live in, my God. So my hope is that a younger generation is going to come and be a little bit more chilled out about all of this stuff.
that would be nice. Listen, the series is brilliant. For people who haven't been listening to it, it's on BBC Radio 4. It's all available as a podcast, Things Fell Apart. I don't know, John, if you go into... go in for kind of reading reviews, but there was a great review in the Times of London, which referred to it as the origin of the species.
Yes. Yeah, I did read that one and was very gratified by it. Yeah. I liked it a lot. And I'm bringing these stories to life at Liberty Hall on June 10th, where people will be able to meet one of the interviewees. I have a wonderful mystery guest. I've got some video clips, some audio clips. I'm going to tell some stories that I didn't tell in the show. So, that's happening too.
Well, John, a segue like that to a plug. I mean, that's why they pay you the big bucks. That's why you're such a pro. Listen, it is on, as John says, the 10th of June, Liberty Hall in Dublin, Friday the 10th of June, door 7:30. If you go on to singularartists.ie, tickets are available from €25. We will stick that link up on our Twitter handle as well, at The Hard Shoulder, so people can find it there. John Ronson, it has been an absolute pleasure.
It was a delight. I always love talking to News Talk, and this was absolutely no exception. It was lovely talking to you.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With Nissan.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.